This week's parsha is Shlach Lecha Anashim. Send unto you people, v'yaturu et Eretz Kanan, and they should spy out or investigate, whichever you feel is more appropriate, et Eretz Kanan, the land of Israel, asher ani noten livnei Yisrael, that I'm going to give to Israel. On the surface, it appears that this is a section that's going to teach us about Israel, and before the Jews would leave the wilderness to enter into the land of Israel, Moshe preferred, so it appears, that they investigate the land and see if it's appropriate. Now, not only today, but since Mount Sinai, there has been difficulties over the land of Israel up until the present time. The land of Israel is the land that, of course, not only is a thorn in the eyes of many nations in the world, but more specifically in the region. And it never permits any peace in that region, going back since the time of when David, or even Abraham, planned to present this land that was promised by God to Abraham to the Jews. And now Moshe is indicating as if, well, let's take another look before we enter into the land of Israel. Like there were some doubts. To further substantiate the idea that this cannot be the motive behind Moses' desire to send these 12 people, from each tribe to spy out the land. He also says, "Uma aris ashehu yosheba hatovahi," and go and see if this is the good land, or maybe it's bad. And about the nations that now occupy that land, are they strong? Are they not? And then he says, In verse 20, Hayesh ba etz im ayin. Are there any trees there? Or are they no trees? So one would translate it in a very superficial, literal sense. Now, did Moshe know whether there were trees in the land? God had already mentioned to Moses that this is the land of milk and honey. It is avat chalav udvash. No, didn't Moses believe that maybe God knew? God knew what this land was about, and certainly Moshe did not question God whether it was so. And here Moshe is asking these people to bring him back a report, which the report that did come back was a mixed kind of set of informational statements. Some seemed to appear to praise the land. Others felt that it was a disaster. As we have always learned, that the Torah is, of course, only a code. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, we could never treat the Torah as a recorded history of Jews. And even this story concerning the spies, as they were called, going to see the land, if it is so or it isn't so, could not, according to Rabbi Shimon, have been the true meaning behind this little incident. And I say little incident only because it appears to be a little incident. Spy out the land, return with the information where it's stated in this parsha that when they came back with the report, and the entire nation wept with the report that they heard, that from then on, destruction would always be a trademark of this world. That day that they came back with the report was Tisha B'Av, the ninth day in the month of Av. And we know the destruction of the first and second temples took place in that day, and many other disasters that befell the Jewish people, Spanish Inquisition, etc. So I read from the Zohar to indicate to us that actually this parsha, delving into its true meaning, certainly applies to us today, and that was the only purpose of even recording the idea of spies going to spy the country, which already was well known to everyone, was well known to all of those Jews at the time. I begin off from the Zohar on page 13, and his discussion is Ahayesh ba etz imayin. Are there trees or aren't there trees? Abchia Amar and Abchia said, Abchia lo have yada Moshe, it ba kama ilanin, mishnayin, da min da, that there are many trees. And in fact, so many different versions or variations of the trees. Vuhu shavach lal Yisrael bekama zmanim. And not only that, but in fact, Moshe mentions throughout the Torah on many occasions about the praise of this land, about how many trees there are and how good it is, as we said before, that it's the land of milk and honey. V'ha-kudesh baruch hu kamalei le-Moshe b'kadmita di-yerezavat chalav v'dvash. And already the law told Moshe about this land. Amar Rav Yosi, ha-idaru chavrayu diktiv ish haya ba'aretz utz Iyov Shimo. And this is one of the unusual expressions of the Zohar, where Rav Yosi says that they already discussed, the companions discussed this aspect, and the question was, Ish haya ba'aretz utz Iyov Shemo. That actually what they were asking, if Job was there. As we know the myth about Job, that he was at the time of the Exodus, and he was a man that continues to exist even to this very moment. And because his name was Utz, Iyov Shemo, he was living in the land of Utz. Actually, the word Utz means Etz. Etz. He was not really asking about Etz, about trees. That's one version of the Zohar. But they were inquiring whether Iyov, Moshe, is telling the Jews, who understood the inner meaning of his question, not as we read it superficially, but they were asking if Iyov was there. Now, what's the difference if Iyov was there or he isn't there? Why was that so important to Moshe? But in any event, now we have a new definition of Etz, one of the definitions of Etz, that it doesn't mean, of course, trees, because, you know, based on the question we just raised, that everyone knew, Moshe and the Jews already knew that there were trees and different sorts of trees, etc. What does this indicate? Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, Remez lahem remiza dechachmata, ama de she'ilu bekadmita. that actually here it hints a hint towards the idea of wisdom. Nothing to do, in fact, whether Eov is there or is not there, but the fact that he was asking about Eov, he was not discussing Eov as a person, whether he lives there or not. And if he did live there, then they would go, and if he wasn't there, they wouldn't go, which seems to be the idea from the literal translation of the verse. In other words, if there are no trees there, then we don't go. If there are trees, we do go. Which obviously, according to the Zohar, was incorrect in that type of questioning, that sort of questioning. And therefore he answered, no, we're concerned with Eov. But what does Eov mean? Says the Zohar, that word Eov, again, is a code for what? It's a code for wisdom. When it says, Hayesh Hashem b'kibenu imayin, Ama taman tachmon, Ihi etchazei lahai, O lahai, says Rabbi Ashlag, because just the Zohar itself is a little difficult to understand just what he's trying to say. What he's referring to is, and I'll explain it shortly, if Zerampin is there, which is called Havaya, the Tetragrammaton, or Arechampin Shochem Bekiba Shenikra Ayin. That is not referring to any of the ideas, but rather to the idea of what state of consciousness exists in this land before we enter the land. State of consciousness. You mean there are different consciousness in different lands? Says the Zohar, yes. That was Moshe's question. Well, who would determine what the consciousness is? I mean, or is a country born already with a certain consciousness? But what his question was, according to Rabbi Shimon, the question was, what do you experience there? What do you feel there? To what are you connecting when you go into that land of Israel? Or Shenikra Ayin. Why? Ayin, because it says Im Yesh or Im Ayin. Very awkward word there. Is God Ayesh Hashem b'kibbeinu imayin? Same way as if there's trees or isn't there trees. It's referring to, is God when they went out of Egypt, and they had sinned as they usually were throughout the wilderness, they were asking, is God with us or not? And then they went to wage war on Amalek. Amalek, as we know, is a code word for safek, for uncertainty. In other words, it took Werner Heisenberg until 1926 or 28 to officially proclaim for all times that this world consists of uncertainty. Today, nothing is certain. And you look around the world, and what do we find to be something of certainty? I mean, if you have, let's say, $14.5 billion, And like I said just the other day in one of the classes, someone has $14.5 billion if he wanted to throw away, let's say, $100 bills every second. Of course, he didn't sleep. But every second he was throwing away $100 bill. It would take him longer, maybe thousands and thousands of years, because the interest on that $14.5 billion would catch up so quickly that every $1,000 bill he was throwing down would be replaced just by the interest alone. So he could never really remove any of that money. And yet we see today that fortunes could be lost overnight. So certainly there is no certainty, because from a one point of view, how could it get lost? But from a second point of view, it does get lost. So the fact that logically, as we look around, it doesn't appear to be something of an uncertain nature, but it wound up to be, yes, true. You cannot be certain about anything, and certainly we're not sure about tomorrow, and sometimes we even forget about yesterday. So the Jews were asking if God is amongst us or not. They were uncertain. And that is called Amalek. In other words, it wasn't talking about confronting Amalek or waging war against Amalek as the text appears, because the text, on a superficial level, would be a corruption in its interpretation. Therefore, what the word ayin means was they wanted to know which level of consciousness had they achieved. Were they at the level of consciousness of Zerampin, or were they at the level of consciousness of ayin? Ayin, meaning Arhampin, meaning that there was no questions anymore. There was only certainty. A concept that we yet have, or we're beginning, I should say, but as yet, the majority of the people in the world do not recognize that there is something of a certain nature. Neither is health certain, wealth certainly is not, nor relationships are certain. All of us are always in doubt. How long will a relationship last? Will a relationship begin? All of these uncertainties are part of our daily living. And therefore, this uncertainty that was expressed in our generation already exists since man came onto this earth. It already exists. Therefore, what they were asking, says Rabbi Shimon, about consciousness. If there was a level of consciousness of uncertainty that prevails throughout the world, then there is no trees. Then there is no Eov, who we say lived yesterday and lives tomorrow. Because that's what the idea of Eov is, and therefore all of the folklore that surrounds Eov is how long did he live? Some say he lived thousands of years. Some say he never existed. All of this mystery surrounding the idea of Eov, again, is only for us a symbol. It represents a symbol of uncertainty. And that's what Moshe was essentially asking the same question that we ask of ourselves today. Are we certain of something? Aren't we certain of something? And therefore, what the Zohar wants to imply, that when he was sending these people to spy out the land of Canaan, to see what, the trees, how strong they are, had nothing to do with that. In fact, this parsha really is making an attempt to teach us to the extent of whether we can achieve certainty in our lives, or we must go through life with uncertainty. And so this whole parsha provides us very clearly, according to the Zohar, very clearly on how one can just manage to live in the world of uncertainty. But for those who are knowledgeable, there is a hint of this wisdom of certainty in the world, that we do not have to be confined to the limit of uncertainty, which unfortunately most of the world finds themselves within at this point, or we could follow the directions of this seemingly unimportant story, except for the importance for those who feel that there is some importance, that unfortunately this brought future destructions to the children of Israel. That's what the significance about this parsha represents, but not according to the Zohar. Ayin. What does ayin mean? Means nothing. Also means not. But the Zohar is going to, or it means, which means that level of consciousness, which means arechampin. Ayin. It's a level. And then you have zeirampin, another code word, which means etz, which means tree. So just remember those two words now. We're talking about etz, which means tree, and ayin, which means, theoretically, nothing. Amalahem. And Rabbi Shimon And this is what Rabbi Shimon continues. This is what Moshe was telling them. Im tiru shepeda ta'aretz heim ki b'shar aratzot sheba'olam. If you look at the trees, which are there. So there was no question whether there were trees or not. But when you observe these trees when you go there, are they the same trees like you find all over the world? Hare yesh ba'etz shu etz ha'chayim t'haynu zere ampin v'lo mimakom elyon yoter. What do you find if they are the same trees that appear all over the world? Then the consciousness that reigns in that country, in that land, will be that of which is Etz HaChayim. Ve'im tiru shepedo ta'aretz mishunam yoter mi v'kol ha'makomot sheba'olam, teidu shemin atika kadisha hu nozel v'nimshach oto shinui elyon. Sheyesh ba mikol ha'makomot sheba'olam. Then you will understand that this land is different if you see trees that you do not find elsewhere, or the same trees but they're different, then you should know that there is another consciousness in this land that doesn't exist in another land. Because what reason is there that in one land you find apples, in another land you don't find apples, you find bananas, and in Israel you find the same apples and bananas in that country, but they're the same size, let's say, speaking from that point of view, or their color is different, whatever. But you see that there is a difference. This land is different than from the way it looks and appears all over the world. Ubezeh teidu im yesh ba'etz shehuzeh rapin im ayin, or ayin. I am representing no. What you find here is nowhere else. That makes sense. Because that is Atika Kadisha, again a code word of the Holy Ancient, which has no meaning if I just translated that for you just by merely translating the word Atika Kadisha. But he will shortly tell us that it has another meaning, and what its essence, I should say. And this here, you want to know from its very beginning. As it says, Hayesh Hashem b'kibeinu, when they were asking, is God amongst us or not? In other words, if we're going to wage war on Amalek, is God with us? Now we know, when it says the word God, what's the word used for God here? The Tetragrammaton. We know the Tetragrammaton has one significance. I mean, there aren't 24 different names to God, meaning because he chooses another name. He likes this name today and another name tomorrow. But rather, each name represents another dimension of consciousness. And when he says, if there is the Tetragrammaton within us, or Ayin, meaning, is the energy, the light of God, the dimension of God, at this level of Tetragrammaton, or is it at the level of Ayin, like we said, Arachampin, Ayin? It's nothing, it's not there. We still don't know what that means, Ayin, but it's nothingness. It's nothingness. V'alkein itchazaktem lekachtem mipri ha'aretz ladat. In other words, bring back the trees, and of course all the Jews will be able to observe these trees and see that they are essentially different from all trees all over the other land. They were in Egypt. They traveled around and they came into Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and there were trees at one time. Today, unfortunately, there's just a desert and oil. I don't know, sometimes some people say better oil than fruits. And this was the question. And this was the question. Now, what is the difference between Atika Kadisha this level of consciousness, which is called nothing, or Ze'er Anpin, which is called Etz HaChayim. Now we have learned that essentially there are two levels of consciousness in this world. In Bereshit, it says that God planted within this world, as we know it, the tree of life and also the tree of knowledge. And Adam, Arishon, Adam was prohibited from eating of the tree of knowledge, but only was permitted to eat of the tree of life. Those are two dimensions. Now we have another dimension. We have another dimension which is referred to as nothingness. Nothingness. What is that dimension? And that was the question. Why would it depend on the Jews? Why didn't Moses tell them? He knew what dimension there is. He knew what was Israel. And he knew why they were going to Israel. Is it because he just promised Abraham that this is the land for the Jews, and therefore, to this day, Jews are still trying to maintain, sustain this land for themselves, which brings one war after another and after another, and, of course, in between, the constant fear that tomorrow may be another war. So that whether there have been six wars since the establishment of the State of Israel, but in between, the fear of war never disappeared. So it's like one continuous war. Whether you have anxiety concerning war or you actually undergo the process of war really doesn't make any difference. Both of them bring you into a consciousness that there's always war, and you don't leave that consciousness. Whether you live in Israel or you don't live in Israel, just read the newspapers, and they constantly keep you into an awareness that tomorrow Syria may attack, and this one may attack, and maybe Iran now with their nuclear warheads can of course easily reach Israel. So now there's another neighbor further away, and so therefore the idea of war continues in that country. And we sometimes fail to raise the question, you know, what's so special in this country that everyone is talking about? But that's what Moshe was asking them to come back. Well, they came back with different trees, then they would know. What would they know? If the trees were different, then this land is different from all other lands. What does it mean, Ayin? And what is Etz HaChayim? Now, we have learned Etz HaChayim is the realm of certainty. The realm of certainty. Well, if it's the realm of certainty, like we asked on Shavuot, and if Adam HaRishon, Adam, lived within that consciousness of certainty, then how come he sinned? How could there be the idea that Adam would think that he would want to eat of the tree of knowledge when he was already in the level of certainty? Why would he eat? Go down, live in the world that we now unfortunately exist because of his sin and brought us into this level of consciousness, and therefore we have the uncertainty. He could have remained up there. But because in Ze'er Anpin, while it is the tree of life, nevertheless, in this world, we have the alternative of going up or down. We're after the sin of Adam. Is there a way that we can maintain within our own consciousness the idea that we never fall, as Adam once did? Is there something there? He said, yes, there is something like that. If the consciousness that exists, whether it be in the people, whether it be in the fruits, a consciousness of Ayin, meaning never, do you have to alternate from one to another? Never do you have to undergo this change of one state to another state, which is where those who are spiritual, at least sometimes experience a feeling of contentment. Not a false one, but a true one, let's assume. And it, in fact, lasts more than a day or 2 days. It lasts for a long time. That contentment almost never disappears. Then the person is in that consciousness of Ayin. If he's in the consciousness of Eitz HaChayim, he also experiences contentment. But at that level, he can fall into the tree of knowledge level, which is good and evil. Then you don't experience this contentment for a long period, but on the contrary, one day is good, one day is bad, which is the norm for most people. The others went to spy, as it says, and this was what they were going to search out. Is this land really special? And it says, Vayalu b'Negev, and they went into Israel, and they went down to the Negev. Vayavo ad Hebron, and they came until Hebron. And the Zohar asks, it should have said Vayavo. Why doesn't it say they came to Hebron? Why does it say only he came? That the others did not go to Hebron, only he. And it says, Amle Rabbi Yosef, Kalev Haya, Shebal et Palel al Kivrei Avot b'Hebron. That who was this that was going to Hebron? It was really only Kalev, who was one of the 12 people sent to spy the land, and he went to Hebron. Amar Kalev, Yoshua, Arei Bochu Moshe. Yoshua, he will come back with a good report, because he was blessed by Moses. But I, why would I be different than the others? Well, what was his question? Was it already predetermined that they were coming back, as we shall see from the Zohar, that it was predetermined that they were going to come back with a bad report, which they did. And already he knew in advance that they would come back with that kind of report, and he would be part of that report, and therefore he went to Hebron to pray that he not fall into the decision of the other 10. Yeshua, would not fall into it because of the blessing of Moshe. But he might fall in. Why would he fall in? I mean, the fact that he desired to go to Hebron because he realized that there's something else was going on here. He would not come back with the same answer as the other. Why did he go to Hebron? It says, the Zohar says, because he went to pray. Well, why did he need it, as it appears from the Zohar, why did he need their assistance? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. V'yachol hinatzel mehem, and that he would not fall into that consciousness of the others. He said, v'ani ma'aseh, what will I do? Lakach etzah, he took his own advice, v'tpalel tvila shel kivrei ha'avot, yidei sheyinatzel me'etzah, and because he prayed, now he would not fall into their wrong advice. Why were they going to give wrong advice? Weren't they going there to find out what kind of consciousness was there? They were going with a clear mind, weren't they? Says the Zohar in this parsha, which I want to return back to this idea, that yes, they originally set out because they were all chieftains of the tribes, of each tribe, and they had already figured out in advance, that if the Jews entered Israel, that they may be out of a job. There may no longer be necessity of them being chieftains of them being chieftains. It's like, you know, today they can't create automobiles or bulbs, because if they created bulbs or automobiles that would maintain its durability, then there wouldn't be any more work tomorrow. People would be out of a job. It's like, I think I may have mentioned once here that once a rabbi was speaking and speaking about Mashiach. And he wasn't so happy that Mashiach would come. It didn't, from his tone, it didn't appear that he was so happy. And one congregant stood up and said, you know, why aren't you so happy if Mashiach come? He said, well, I'll be out of a job. He was already concerned in advance of whether that job would be waiting for him, because once Mashiach came, obviously there is no need, as it says in Jeremiah, all will know, and there won't be the need for a rabbi. So was this the same idea? And therefore, they already had established a consciousness. But let's say they did. They were afraid of it. But they did bring back, a tree that was unusual. It was eshkol. It was a grapefruit tree. I'm saying other kinds of trees, but it was different. The size were different. Now Moses told them originally, go there, pick up some trees, bring them back, and we'll all know if it's different or it wasn't. So when they brought back this fruit, then it was obviously different than what they had seen in Egypt, Jordan, whatever they had already been moving in the wilderness. From place to place, they saw that this tree was different. So what is the difference of what their consciousness was? And what was he afraid of? Didn't he see Caleb, that when they got back, no matter what these people thought, whether they were going to be out of a job, as the Zohar says, and therefore they came back and said bad things too. But the idea that they brought back some truth, which was the tree, in fact, it was so heavy they couldn't carry it. It was just a branch of the fruit. Couldn't carry it. No one person could carry it by itself. So it was obvious. And what was he afraid of? Says the Zohar, which is a lengthy discussion, very difficult, but I'll try to present to you the idea of what the Zohar is saying here. How does that apply to us? Since we said, as the Zohar said, it was not merely a recording of some historical fact of spying and coming back with a report. But as the Zohar, and we'll read a little piece of that Zohar shortly, who determines what goes on in this world? You've already, I'm sure, learned in the classes that man is the pivot of everything that happens. Only man. And that weaves itself right through the Zohar. That if there are wars, man causes the war. If there are the recessions, man causes them by his behavior, by his consciousness. Where his head is. Where his head is the way things ultimately make its appearance. When they came into this country, Israel, what he was asking them, if you remember, he was not asking them if there were trees. He was asking if there were different trees. And they brought back a different tree. And that would be the reason that they all will know that this country has something different connected with it rather than other countries where the same fruits are grown. And they would all know. But that was not the original question of Moshe, if you remember. How would they be able to tell? How would they be able to tell whether this country was really special or not? Was not the only question that was being raised by Moshe. Of course, how can you tell whether the plan, the game plan you've set out with is going to work or it won't work? It may be the best laid plan, but at the end you still have to look at the fruits. Did it bear fruits or didn't it bear fruits? The fact that there was no defect, there was nothing there that could seemingly go wrong. But if nothing could go wrong, then why didn't what we had hoped to achieve at the end of this game plan, why didn't it make its appearance? Because, again, what he was saying, Moshe, what do you experience there? Do you experience Ayin, or do you experience Etzach Hayim, which are both are very good? But one is where you cannot fall into traps. Even if we are in Etzach Hayim, we can, and we've learned in the classes, that we have only one free choice. Everything is run by cassettes. While we would all like to believe that we are in control of our lives, in essence, according to the Zohar, and which bears fruit, unfortunately, in this world, that we are not in control of any aspect of our lives, certainly not the three major ones, relationships, wealth, and health. We have no control over them. And the only free will that has been allocated to mankind is which level of consciousness does he desire to choose. If he chooses the level of consciousness of the tree of knowledge, then he's into that cassette and no further control. Whatever that cassette is, it has in store for you, that is the way the events will occur. Now, I know this is a difficult concept, certainly if we have Satan in the back of us telling us, look, are you going to listen to what the Zohar is telling you, that you have no control over your life, like you're just a robot? Will you accept that? I mean, don't you have any dignity? Don't you have any value? And this is all Satan speaking in the back of our heads. This is a new concept, that we're only robotic. In fact, we're not robotic, are we? Sure we are robotic. We have even reached the level that scientists have already declared, that human beings are far inferior to the computer. See if you can figure like a computer does. See if you can arrive at results that a computer can be. Computer can gather billions of pieces of information today and within a split second come up with an answer. Now, if there was thrust at you billions of pieces of information, you wouldn't know where to begin to sort it out. So that's an indication that we do not have the capability of what? Of a robot. What is a computer, if anything but a robot? It's certainly not a human being. And if we have already reached the level of what was termed by, he termed it only for Jews, we are subhuman people. What do you mean subhuman? Well, human beings think that they have some sort of control, they are something in this world, and he called the Jews subhuman. But now the computer says we're all subhuman. We can't even perform like something which is completely devoid of a mind of its own, because the only way that computer furnishes us with information is what has been installed or what program is part of that computer. But by and within itself, it doesn't do anything. Now, we are lower than that, so where is our control? Therefore, according to the Zohar, these three levels that we just mentioned, level of Eitz HaDaat, level of Eitz HaChayim, we can choose where to be between these two. But once we've made that decision to be either in the Tree of Life reality or Tree of Knowledge reality, then we fluctuate times when we can sustain the Tree of Life, which is rare, but it can happen. Then we fluctuate until that
point where we can't maintain the tree of life reality, we fall down to the uncertainty, true uncertainty level. But even within Eitz HaChayim, the uncertainty of whether I can maintain that level or not, again, depends on man. Then there is the third level, Ayin. Moses knew, when he asked them, Im Yesh, if God is there, when they asked if God is there, or he asked if there's Etz there, or Ayin. Because as long as there were Etz, as long as there was Etz, tree of life, oh sure, with tree of life, and if we can sustain it, we'd constantly remain there, and it would be a perfect civilization of certainty. But then we always had the free will to decide that we would fall to the lower level. But if Ayin was present, meaning no longer even free will, there is no longer the possibility that we can fall to the Etz HaDaat. That was his question. So, and since he had learned, as all these Jews had learned, then, that everything, the atmosphere, the environment, depends on where you place your consciousness. And if their consciousness was because they were going to lose it, their job, then Kalev knew that consciousness of these other 10 chieftains, whose consciousness already was the uncertainty of whether they would have a job or not, placed them already into uncertainty. This would influence the whole of the environment. Therefore, he would be influenced too. And therefore, for him to sustain or try to achieve the iron level, he had to go to Hebron. And at Hebron, what did he do at Hebron? He prayed. What does it mean? He opened up a Tehillim and he prayed? Or he opened up a prayer book and he prayed? No. He knew, as all the others knew, that there was a system by which we can connect to the Ayin, where we would leave literally the dimension of free will. Who wants to leave the dimension of free will? No, God gives us an opportunity. You're looking for misery, you have the free will to choose it. As most of us do. Most of us do. You speak to people who are about to have an operation and they'll call me and say, give me the dates. I said, did you ask yourself whether you want the operation or not? Well, look, I've been having this problem going back and forth with doctors. Let me get it over with. What kind of answer is let me get it over with? Do you know the consequences of getting it over with? Do you know what could develop? No. And then, well, why do you want to? Who says getting over with means you're over with what? You're over with one stage of the process. So now you've removed this one, and now you've brought another one into focus. But you've gone from one cassette to another. Why do you choose? Well, maybe this will do the job. Again, there is no free will. The pattern runs along the pattern that we choose. If you choose the pattern of Eitz HaDaat, says the Zohar, or you choose the pattern of Eitz HaChayim, that's where you are, that's where your environment is, and that's the effect that the whole world will have over you. Unless you can do something special. Unless you do what Kalev did. You know how to make your connections, as we do here. We follow the connections when we pray in Shabbat, or we pray even during the day. We're not here. It's always an announcement. We're either at the Bet HaMikdash or we're by the Ari. We mention those people rather than mentioning Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov because our levels of consciousness are not of such a higher dimension that we can easily connect as Kalev could. So we connect with Rabbi Shimon, knowing that Rabbi Shimon certainly was in the Ayin. He was in the Ayin. There was no falling from one level to another, to the extent that the snake pleaded, snake meaning Satan, pleaded with God, if you don't remove Rabbi Shimon from this world, then I have I have no chance of accomplishing or influencing anyone to choose the path of uncertainty. This man influences the entire environment, the entire quantum universe that we exist in. He is influencing it to such an extent that I cannot influence anyone to choose misery as opposed to contentment. And we choose it. Make no mistake. Although Satan will say, who wants misery? But if you kind of draw up a little diary of your decisions, you will see that not only 5 out of 10, but in all decisions that you had made, you chose the path of misery. Because had you asked one more question, you would probably not have taken that route. But what the Zohar does is try to expand our awareness. What do you mean by expanding our awareness? Meaning that when you make a decision, look for other questions to raise. Because the fact that you're satisfied doesn't mean you've reached the proper conclusion. And once you've reached that conclusion, whether it's complete or not, that's the cassette you're on. And if it's an inconclusive decision, meaning because you haven't raised enough questions, then you're in that cassette of uncertainty. Whether it's 1 year, 3 years, in this age of Aquarius, it's going to happen much quicker than that. It no longer will even take 2 years. As I said, Ashvuot, if we pass the 2 year separation period, we're almost to that period when you steal, and maybe if your hand doesn't come off, but you see the way the money goes right out of your stole, or that object goes right out of your possession. That's how close we are. That will unfortunately, or fortunately, lead many people to consider stealing because of knowing that the consequences will be there because you've seen it happen. So that's one way we're going to achieve, and that's the difficult route of choosing a path. But whatever path we choose, we will see that if we made this decision, that's the consequence. If it is a decision which on another level is inconclusive, then the fact that I had figured out to the level that I can or choose all of its consequences doesn't mean that this brain here, which is Satan, the obvious rational brain, which is Satan, well, he's going to be sure that your frame of reference is a limited one, because that's Satan, limitation, separation, etc. So we learn here the basic idea that we try to teach, but this is the source of it, to go and explore. They were going to explore the land of Israel. They were going to explore and see the consequences of what Moshe's question was. Is your head going to be that you're going to lose your job, and therefore you'll change your report, and you'll give the idea that this land does not have a consciousness of iron? And while we cannot change the consciousness of Israel, that consciousness there is iron. It'll never change. It is the only place. Does it mean physically I have to be there? No. Is it stronger if I am there? Yes, because there is a physical part to me. That's my problem. The physical body, which knows and is connected to the realm of limitation. The body is what prevents me from traveling all over the world. My mind can travel all over the world. If I had taken a trip around the world, within a matter of seconds, I can cover every area that maybe was a 2-month trip. I can do that in almost a matter of seconds with my mind. It is the body that prevents me from achieving the same idea, because the body is one that functions in a state of limitation, in a state of separation, separating one area from another. This is what was being discussed over here. This is what we're being taught. That when you're going out to investigate, not only the land of Israel, anything. What does it mean you're going out to investigate? It means that now you have to make a decision. Are you going to enter into this decision with preconceived ideas, is that arriving at a decision? You've already made the decision before you began discussing the matter. You have this preconceived notions of what you expect at the end. Then why are you questioning? Why are you questioning? Says Moses, once they went in with a preconceived notion, they had no choice but to come back with what they came back. Same as with every person day in and day out. If you have if you're using your preconceived notions, meaning that's the extent of what I understand about anything. That's a preconceived notion. Preconceived. What do you mean preconceived? In other words, you haven't conceived all of the aspects. You've already placed a conception of what you want to see. Then why are you questioning it? What is there that you expect to find that would be different than that which you already have? So simple. Well, it wasn't so simple, because look what happened. And look what happens to all of us, or most of us. Come in with preconceived notions. How do you get out of that preconceived notion? Influence of everything around us prevents us. If we haven't got enough problems by and within ourselves, now we have others around us. Others represent a more serious problem than by and within ourselves. Others around us, the environment. And as we know, most of us will dress according to the way everyone dresses. Most of us will live in an area where, if you're, let's say, Chinese, where do you gravitate to? To an area where Chinese live. Did you make that decision to live there? Of course not. Or if you're an Israeli, you want to live amongst Israelis, you're this or that, or you have so much money, then you live here. You have so much money, you live there. Who makes the decision where you move? Who makes the decision which house or what area you're going to locate? We never make decisions. Never. And if we don't raise our consciousness or awareness, then we come in, as the Torah tells us here, with a preconceived notion. We already determined before we even begin to raise the questions, if there is this level or that level, is this good for me? Will this improve? Will this enhance my situation? But already you have been influenced by the environment. Think of where your decision must take you. Is it already preconceived, or are you now beginning to raise questions so that you can achieve a greater awareness? This is the beginning of this parsha. It's nothing to do with exploring the land of Israel and so on. It has to do with our daily decision making. That was the question that Moses raised to the Jews, and now they had to make a decision. What did you want? Was his question. Did you want iron? Because what you want is what you will find in the country. If you want iron, if you want total certainty, that's what you're going to find. But if you want uncertainty, whether I'm in a job, I have a job, or I don't have a job, where I'm going to live, will I have sufficient funds to do this or this or that, then where is your head? Your head isn't only in one place, in the area of uncertainty. That's where your path will lead you to. Not to an improvement. There cannot be any improvement. There will never be an improvement. Take a look all around us. How many of us can say in 20 years, if we're all 20, or we're 30, or we're 40, or we're 50, or 90, how many of us have undergone an experience different than the one we've had yesterday? How many of us can truthfully say we've undergone a transformation? Is that so difficult a question to raise in our lives? Are we doing the same things we did yesterday? Is that a difficult question to raise? But Satan is so strong. That's what he was afraid of, Caleb. He says, there's an environment. There's something in the air that prevents us from raising our consciousness. That's what the Torah here is talking about. They were going out to explore, but they weren't going out to explore. They weren't going to find anything different than what they had already decided in advance that it would be. because there was an environment. An environment says there always has to be a job. You must always hold down a job. Someone says, I want to earn more money. I'll never make it at holding down a job. Why? I know that. I know many people. I know, in fact, most people who hold down a job. His job could be chief executive officer of General Motors. I mean, would he then think of going out on his own, opening up a business in the hopes of growing? It's all so entangled and so confusing. Now, how do you get out of this mess? Well, that's what the Torah is here for. It's not here to teach me a recording of history. It's here to teach me right now. How do I get out of that maze, of that track that I'm in, that very few of us ever move out of? And therefore, it says, Caleb went to Avraham. If you can't get out, then what choice do you have? What do? You pray? That hasn't done anything for nobody. Whether you're praying in this religion or that religion, what changed? What changed? Nothing. Nothing. Therefore, the only answer, or if you were born like Rabbi Shimon, meaning if you're like Yehoshua, that immediately was blessed by Moshe, meaning that's your track, it's been established already. Yehoshua was going to be in the iron, finished. He didn't have to go nowhere. Whether he went to Israel or he didn't go to Israel. He wasn't going there to find anything. He knew what he would find in advance. Why would he know that he would find the iron? Why would he know that when Moshe says, you want to know what the environment is there? You know what the environment is there in advance. But now you want proof that's in the pudding. Well, you'll see. You're going to find trees. Because that's the land of Israel. It was already said it's the land of milk and honey. No. What does that mean, milk and honey? It means exactly what Moshe was telling Yehoshua. It means exactly what God told Moshe and told all the Jews. That's the land that has the ability to instill in the environment, if people are with that kind of consciousness, an ability of iron. And that iron in that land will be sufficient if that's what's functioning. Unfortunately, it's not. All it does is create wars. Been doing that for 2,000 years. Whether it's the Romans, whether it's the Persians, whether it's the Crusaders, whether it's Greece, whether it's Persia, whether it's, you name it. And it'll soon be the Chinese. And it'll soon be the fundamentalists. They only have one thing in mind. They have one thing in mind. We are being told that right here in this beginning. Because if you want to search out iron, you want to search out, because somewhere in this head, there's a capsule. It's a time-releasing capsule that always tells you once in a while, is there a place of Shangri-La? Is there a place for the fountain of youth? Where are all these places that legends have sprung up about? Everybody wants to be young again. Someone, Chas V'Shalom, lost a limb. He wants the limb restored. If someone was wealthy, now he's poor. What does he want? He wants to restore the wealth that once was. All of these things. Where do you find all these things? Moshe said, tells us right here. You can only find it in the land of Israel. If you want to sustain your wealth, only one place you can do that, in Israel. Well, what happens if, for whatever reason, my destiny is to be here? And we know that every Jew, every soul of a Jew, has a destiny to be in Chutz Laaretz, to be outside of Israel. After the fall of Adam, this was destined. We have no choice. Everyone, whether it's in this lifetime, but we see even in Israel. You could be born in Israel. Most of them, if not all of them, will one day, I will say all of them, even if they're born in Israel, will be taking that trip. The usual comment will be, well, I want to, get a little freshening out. Lavrer, you know what I mean? That's the expression. So they've got their reasons why they leave Israel, right? Everyone is going to take that trip outside of Israel. Not going to be one person that can go through life today in Israel and say, I've never been outside of Israel. Because there is a purpose of being outside of Israel. It's called bringing back the sparks that are distributed all over the world. So everyone's got to bring back a spark. And I don't want to get into that subject. But what is important is that being outside of Israel, we are all destined to be outside of Israel, one time or another. But what he was telling the Jews here who were not in Israel, who were not going into Israel, because they had already made the golden calf at this time. Why was he sending them? Who was going to Israel? Well, the answer is, you know, it's the children. The parents want to know what kind of land they're sending their children into. I mean, we can go on and on with different explanations which have no basis, no foundation, no foundation whatsoever. That you can live here, and if you can be connected 24 hours a day, even when you sleep, because we know that we can determine what we want to sleep. You want to wake up a certain time, just tell your brain. Such a simple item. Want to wake up at 3 o'clock in the middle of the night? Tell yourself before. But there's only one problem with that. If you don't believe it, it doesn't work. See? You can't fool the light. That light knows all the time. You can't fool it. You can't fool it. It knows. But when you are determined, I want to get up at 3 o'clock, 4:30, 5:30, you don't need an alarm clock. But it's good to have an alarm clock. Maybe you're not sure, but the fact that you take the alarm clock already, you've got a problem. Got a problem. So, you know, it becomes a little difficult. But at least what the Torah is trying to tell you, you want the answer? There's only one answer. You've got to be in Israel. And so when we have all these pictures, look what we put on the walls. I mean, we don't have Chagall windows and other things in the synagogue, right? Like we put up grave sites, cave over there. I mean, what are we doing? I'm telling you, this is what we're doing. Realizing that outside of Israel, then how come we have it in the centers, Bet HaKnesset in Israel? Because we can be in Israel, and you know where your head is. Not in Israel. You're thinking about how soon or how quickly you can get out of that country so you can go make some money, or for a million other reasons you want to get out of that country. Everyone wants to leave. Remember, everyone wants to leave. I'm not saying everyone wants to leave, but on a permanent basis, everyone wants to leave. There isn't one person in Israel that doesn't want to leave. A week, 2 weeks, 6 months, whatever it is, everyone must leave. And therefore, we could have our head, our body could be in Israel, but the internal head of ours is already on that trip outside of Israel. This is what, and that's why it's called Shlach Lecha Anashim. Because Moses also wanted to know, when these people come back, I want to know where their consciousness is. If their consciousness is not in Ayin, I can't go into that place. That's not my place. My place is Ayin. And they will influence this country, as we do today in Israel. We cause every day the uncertainty of war. It is only ourselves that brings about that kind of condition. We have no one to blame but ourselves. If we're Jewish, that's our problem. The light demands that we be totally connected with the light. If we don't follow the demands of the universe, and that's a natural law and order of this universe, you're born Jewish, you've got no choice. Have no choice in the matter. Okay? Then the Zohar continues, and that's why it says that Caleb went to Hebron, where we go. We go to connect with these people. They're all on another level of consciousness, higher level than ours. And in fact, the Zohar says that we shall never, from the time that Rabbi Shimon went out of this world, we shall never achieve a level of consciousness as it was at the time of Rabbi Shimon or at the time of the Jews in the wilderness, to achieve that kind of level of consciousness, which is called the Dor Deya, until our time. Till our time. That means today, according to Avraham Azulai and the Yari HaKadosh, we are the Dor Deya. We have such an infinite capacity of consciousness, but nobody's making us aware of it. We all think the same way. We all follow the designer fashion or this or that. Look around. Question. Explore yourself. Lecha. Explore yourself. See where you really are. Or not, you're not going to make any difference. You might see for a moment, things are improving. But sure enough, as they began improving, so they will come to some leveling off. And you look at all corporations, always giving you the reports about every year. But then sometimes they begin to level off, and sometimes they even begin to lose money. There is no such thing as a straight line of action. In fact, they say the only time that you can find a straight line of action is when the man is about to expire. It's the only time. What does it mean he's about to expire? He's about to die. It means a physical body. That man is alive. He'll be alive after that recording of his heart disappears. He will stay alive, but the body no longer will be able to hold on to him. We have that problem. Ups and downs is because we have a physical body. It's not our consciousness. Anyway, the Zohar continues with another. Well, since I see we're running out of time, I'd like to give you another very interesting Zohar, which you might find difficult in understanding if you read it by yourself. That's why I'm choosing certain parts. Amar Rabbi Elai. Rabbi Elai said he was one of the students. In fact, he was one of the five students of Rabbi Akiva that remained alive. Yechnisu l'makom acher v'tiru. He told, this is talking about a spirit that came to Rabbi Elai. He was of that dimension where he didn't have to speak to, like Rabbi Shimon, who could speak to Moshe, and Eliyahu, who had long ago passed on, but he achieved that level of consciousness, Rabbi Shimon. There was no difficulty now to address himself to that's what we say when you're with the light, then you're with that level of consciousness. And that's where all of us must be if we want to find some stability in our lives. And he says like this, and the spirit came and told him, let's go to a certain God. Ru gam kein dahinu. They saw many, many other things in this particular area. They went to a place that we would refer to as a cemetery. Umiad meitim, and over there, immediately when they died, what was happening? They were buried. They came up. Alive, like a human being. Died again. They went in by themselves into the ground. Came up again. And this was a procedure that kept on going. Truly a remarkable event. I mean, if it's true. But the Zohar says this is what Rabbi Elai saw. They died. They come back again. Says the Zohar, who are these people? Who are they? They were the Matei Midbar. This was the Dor Deya that we're talking about. We're really talking about ourselves today. They were the ones who came back at the time of Rabbi Shimon. And as the Yari HaKadosh said it, and it's the only way I know it, is that the people who are coming back in our time, right now, are the Dor Deya. The ones who died in the wilderness. All of the Dor Deya died in the wilderness. Amro lo mazeh. Then they told him, Well, what do you see over here? Amalei, hey Moshim Zeba called Yom. I mean, I'm observing. Rabbi Loi, he was there with another student. And they said, what are they doing here? And the voice or the spirit answers, oh, they do this, Elo, hey Moshim Zeba called Yom. They do this every day. What a pastime. Right? Ukashimaitima, when they die, miat ne'akav. Oh, it doesn't take time for decomposition of the body. But the minute they go back into the ground, immediately they disappear. Ne'akav. The body is completely rotten to the point where nothing is left. Ne'akav zuma ra'a shekiblu b'tchila. And each time, part of the evil that they had acquired by their action, as we know soon. In this parsha, we have for the first time the word Nazi mentioned. If you remember in one of the classes or the parsha Tashavua, that Nazi is not a new word. It's a word mentioned, Nun Aleph Tzadik Yud, in Hebrew is Nazi, and that word is mentioned in this week's parsha also. Very strange. Why in this parsha, when God says, how long are they going to continue? Moshe says, how long are they going to continue acting as a Nazi to me? What's a Nazi? I mean, our association with Nazism, or even neo-Nazism, represents one thing, but he's addressing this to the Dor Deah. That expression is ours. Ours today, as it was those in the wilderness. And each time they're undergoing a burial, they're undergoing a cleansing. Va'omdim miyad begufam chadashim meirim. And then they suddenly have a resurrection. Me'elu gufim akdoshim shehaya lehem b'amdam ha'al Sinai. And what happens? Each time, these people, they're special. Like we are special today. Like there never was. As Rabbi Shimon said, in the past 2,000 years, there will not be these kind of people, other souls, but not those who physically experienced, because all the souls were there on Mount Sinai, but not all the bodies were there, but they were all there, and so all the souls were elevated to that point. But only this generation of the Midbar, the ones who wandered in the wilderness, they were the ones who stood there, and what they were doing because of all of their evil action. This was a continuous process of down and up. One day there was complete devastation of the body. The next day, it rose up again. What do you want to tell us here? What's the message? Okay, it's true that we know the reason for burial of the body, the requirement for burying a body, is that the earth has a power of cleansing the physical body, which contains the aspect of Satan. As you heard on Shavuot, there's a Zohar that tells us we have two bodies. We have two bodies. We have a body that never, as part of the soul, part of our soul, which is never, never placed in a position of disappearance. It always remains with us. And then there is the other body. That other body is Satan. That is the Satan within all of us. And so these people undergo the ups and downs, meaning they're buried today, they're resurrected tomorrow. Now, why is this so interesting to us? And what does it have to do? What does this Zohar have to do with, you know, this Parsha? Ki amdu kulam al ha Sinai begufam b'li lechluch. Because when they stood on Mount Sinai, they were there in a body without garbage. Without any garbage. Because after they drew down, after the golden calf, and including the golden calf, they drew down a consciousness which is Yetzer Hara, meaning At that point, what was the whole idea of golden calf in a capsule? It was referring to the idea that they had descended back into the world of Eitz Hadaat, that we exist. They went down into this good and evil dimension. Chazu b'gufam acherim, b'gufam shahalem mikodem lachem. Gufam chayim. In other words, once they were like this. In other words, sometimes they're like this, like we experience in our own lives, is what the Zohar is saying. Because v'yitnatzlu b'nei Yisrael et edyam mehar chorev, it says that when they sin at the golden calf, they lost ornaments. But the only one who really explains it is the Zohar. The ornaments were the level of consciousness that they had achieved on Mount Sinai was lost. Lost. Not forever. It comes and goes. Comes and goes. What this Pasha is telling us again is the same idea, except with another dimension. It's telling us, especially for us today, as opposed to before the beginning of the Age of Aquarius. From the time of the Age of Aquarius, from the time of the Ari, and until this present time, and each time more of those souls are coming, more and more and more and more, because you have those souls who were not there in that golden calf incident, were not there, and so they do not undergo the same problems that we find today. A rapid disintegration, market goes up, nobody knows why, everything is bad, goes down suddenly, or nobody knows why. These rapid changes is indicated by the Zohar. That's the Zohar's clue to us. That when it says, these people of the Dor De'ah, one day they're born, one day they die. One day they're born, one day they die. That's for a lot of people today. One day they're sitting on top of the world. The next day they're at the bottom of the totem pole, like a lot of people today. One day he has a job, one day he doesn't have a job. One day he's healthy, the next day he finds out he's no longer healthy. No guarantees. This is the Dor De'ah. If you want the clues of where we are, explore. Explore your environment, which is what Moshe was telling them, but not necessarily just to explore the land of Israel. Because over there he was telling them that I know what your consciousness is, and know that you will influence the consciousness of Israel. But there was also an answer. It wasn't just that the Torah is telling us or forecasting for us what we expect to find in the future. We are living in that period now. The up and down. Daily, our bodies, our consciousness, change from day to day. All of a sudden, one day someone feels something, goes to the doctor, and now the doctor tells him what he has. Terrible. What did he have yesterday? Nothing. Everything was wonderful. One day, a husband comes home and says, I'm leaving you. What was yesterday? Wonderful. The life was wonderful. One day comes home and says, I'm leaving. One day we have wealth, one day we don't. One day we have health, one day we don't. This is what the Zohar, and that's why he's discussing this aspect right here in Pasha Shalach Lecha. It is to teach us what we expect in this age of Aquarius, what we can expect, and also its antidote. The antidote is with what Kalev came back with what Yehoshua, when they did come back. Because on that day that they came back, and then everyone wept. So it says, all the Jews wept in that day, and that day was Tisha B'Av. Now, you know, I know a lot of people that have Tisha B'Av maybe all year. Is Tisha B'Av one day in the year? If it only was. But unfortunately, it occurs more for many people than one day a year. One day a year of disappointment, I think there isn't anyone who wouldn't settle for that. Some people want one day a year of contentment. That would satisfy them, let alone one day a year of Tisha B'Av. No, no. We are living in this age of Aquarius. That this, he makes this revelation that what Rabbi Eloi physically saw. Bodies come up, bodies go down. But for Rabbi Eloi, in his state of consciousness, he knew what he saw here. Since this is a quantum universe and all is one, everything that happens in one set of sceneries of a movie applies to everything else that exists. And therefore, if this is what they were experiencing, ups and downs, the body disintegrates, the next day it's better. The doctor doesn't know. I don't know why, you know, you got better. But thank God you got better. What does that tell the person? Now I'm better? No, the same thing can happen tomorrow. As it says, it does happen. Because the next day, these same bodies go back into the grave. And you know, a grave is not only where you place dead people. There are many people living in homes that are cemeteries. Cemetery is not just where you place dead people. This is the consciousness that we have to take ourselves out of. This is Satan's consciousness. He separates things. The Zohar can tell us a almost incredible story of Rabbi Eloi, but at the same time, he's talking to every single one of us. And he's talking to us about Shlach Lecha. This is the week, and on Shabbat, what we will be reading is what? What do we want to achieve? Well, the little we've read here from the Zohar, we want to achieve a consciousness how I can begin thinking of how to change the procedure of up, down, like an electrocardiogram, up, down. As long as the body is there, it's up and down. In the grave, it's up and down. In a home, it's up and down. Can this madness ever stop? Just a little thing like Kalev. But he was giving us the total clue. We have no other choice. Have no other choice, you imagine? If you do not pray the way we do here, you have no choice. Tell me one synagogue outside of the centers all around the world that tells you to go to Israel now. You're here in this country. You're here in France. You're there in Argentina. You're in South Africa. And every synagogue there does not tell you, go to Israel. Stay, we're here. And when you're there, we learn that Kalev, to get out of this situation that he knew he was in, to be able to free himself from this prison, he had to go to Hebron. Whatever, and that means many things. It means Chibur, and that's what the Zohar explains. Why was it called Hebron? Hebron is connection, where things make up and appear. The idea and dimensions of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They were there. Now we, through them, can be there. And B'ezrat Hashem, we shall achieve that consciousness. I just wanted to share with you, because something dramatic happened a few days ago, and I was not even aware of it. But they came, Life, they print magazine, but, you know, Time, Life, Warner, comes out once in a while with books. They came out with a book with the meaning of life. About 8 months ago, the editor called me, said, well, I want to write an article. I must tell you, at that time, I said, another article? What's another article? And it was the insistence of Karen. He said, look, life is asking you. You know, I don't know what they want with the article. I don't know where they're going to. Anyway, they did print a book, and I wrote them a large article because I like to. I don't feel like I have that problem. I can't say one thing in, you know, 2 seconds. I have a problem. I have a problem. Anyway, I wrote them an article, and there's my picture together with Begin and Shevardnadze. I mean, you ask me if I knew that. No. And should I know? And there are so many things that they did that is beyond what I could ever dream of. I'm the only one with a full page. Why me? See Begin and Shem Nazari, even all people that you read in the newspapers. Certainly, I don't like my name in the newspapers, and you don't read my name in the newspapers every day. But everyone here is a name that everybody knows. If we don't, but more or less, most of them we've heard about. Even Michael Jackson is there. it's people you know. And they're all giving an explanation of the meaning of life. They're all giving an explanation of the meaning of life. And I mentioned the Zohar. I even underlined the word Zohar. Maybe they'll even do it that way. Put the word Zohar, it should be different. When you see an italic word, you see it different than, And then who do they have on the page? You see a big stone. And you see monks, Buddhist monks. I mean, they should have put some Jews over there, but I guess they never had a picture with Jews, trying to meditate. We have this tremendous stone. Anyone who wants to leave, we're getting copies from them. Anyway, just to show you, it's the craziest thing that I ever experienced. I can describe it for you, but you see about one picture. Anyway, here you see this big stone. Imagine how the stone, how big the stone must be, right? Here you have Buddhist monks praying, because they're praying, that the stone won't fall down, you see? and they're going to keep the stone there. The power of the mind and so on, this is what they put on there for me. And they gave me a full page. I thought that was a little unusual, but that's what happens today. So in 1 minute, we're recognized, if we consider them as people that, and that's what happened. I only want to tell you that there is certainty, but it's not the certainty that the rational mind can grasp, but there is certainty in our world. Just connect, and there's certainty. You don't have to figure it out, because we can never figure out tomorrow. But the light knows what tomorrow is. Chevron knows what tomorrow is. Once you made your connection there, everything is connected. So I just wanted to share that. You see, it says, of course, the research center of Kabbalah. And this is all over the world. And everybody else is there. So. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. That's it.